Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Warning, the following content may contain elements that are not suitable for some audiences. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hello, kitties. This is y'all's ghoulie, John Kassir, the voice of the Crypt Keeper. And you're listening to Slasher Radio.
Welcome to Slasher Radio. My name is Bones, and I'm joined by Kat Valore and no Rob Humphrey this week. What's going on, Kat?
Not much. How's it going?
It is going. Rob ditched us, man.
Yeah. He's down doing spooky Halloween events without us.
Yeah, Rob is down at Universal's Halloween Horror Nights, and I'm a little jealous, not gonna lie. But, you know, he is not here this week, and he is upset that he is not here this week because we are going to be joined shortly by Ryan Turek of Blumhouse, all kinds of titles. We go over it, vice president, all this stuff, creatively and producing and whatnot that Ryan handles over there. And it was before we get into that, actually, I'm getting too far ahead. We're joined by, quote-unquote special guest. For patrons, they will, I guess they crowned her on Twitter for her power ranking most recently, and all around pain in the tushy, Allie Surreal. What's going on, Allie?
Oh hi. What an introduction, as always. Thank you.
Yeah, I try my best for you, Allie. I really set you up to succeed the best that I can, you know. Thank you for filling in for Rob.
Yeah, no problem.
Big shoes to fill. Do you have any Tom Atkins stuff?
I do not.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't have tie-dye Crocs either.
You know what you do have? The gratitude of all Slasher Radio listeners. We need to talk. Usually we do this during the news segment. But Mikey pointed out that we won't be having a news segment today. So we're just going to jump right in. Allie Surreal almost broke Gabagoolie Mystery Corner because I don't know how we're going to top this. Who would like to do the introduction for this?
I already gave an introduction. I said all around pain in the tushy. I said it. Tell them what you did, Allie. Go ahead. Yeah, tell them what you did.
Well, Mikey said something which I thought was pretty funny and submitted it to Urban Dictionary on his behalf as a direct quote.
Allie went ahead and put me on Urban Dictionary for an Italian joke.
It was your Italian joke.
I don't even know what to say. I did say it, but it's like, God damn it, man. Why of all the things, of all the things I say, you know, like I'm smart sometimes. I give myself a little bit of credit every now and then. I say something kind of cool. That's the thing you take from it, Allie, and run with.
I wrote it down and everything.
Oh, great.
Didn't want to forget.
Yeah, I made a joke about a prostitute, an Italian prostitute, prostitute. And Allie went ahead and put it on Urban Dictionary for the world to see.
Yes, it now reads, prostitute, an Italian prostitute. What do you call an Italian prostitute? A prostitute, credit, and bones. And my favorite part of this whole thing, which people have not been latching on to nearly enough on Twitter, because it's on Urban Dictionary, this now means that you can buy a prostitution mug. It is advertised. I'm looking at it right here. It says prostitution, Urban Dictionary on the front. And on the back side of the mug, it says the act or practice of selling oneself for pasta, which just chef's kiss, perfect merch. Slasher Radio endorses this.
No, we don't. I was glad that that wasn't brought up much. Although in Discord, I think it was Chris or something who brought up the mug. Yeah, I was kind of happy that that wasn't being shined upon, Kat. I appreciate you putting a little light on that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, we're not currently, our merch page is down. We've got to get the people what they want. A prostitution.
Great. Just where I wanted to be in life. This is wonderful. Yeah, thanks for that, Allie. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I mentioned the power rankings before. Any non-patrons probably don't really know what the hell we're talking about. We have every quarter of the year, Rob ranks the patrons for some reason. And Allie went from first like two quarters in a row. Allie, right?
I think so,
yeah.
Yeah, and now she's on the bottom. So, like, this thing made Rob happy. And now, like, I don't understand what you're doing here, Allie. It's very perplexing.
I'm not doing anything. I didn't put it on Twitter. I just sent it to you and put it in your Discord.
Yeah. You put it in the Discord. So I want people to know. I tell people this all the time. I face things head on. I want everybody to know. I know about it. I'm aware of it. And I also put in there that this means war. So I want them to know that something is coming. I don't know what yet, but God damn it, that was uncalled for. Moving away from that. Thanks for bringing that up, Kat. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're not going to do news this week, and we're going to kick you over to that interview with Ryan shortly. And after that, we are all going to give you our top five Blumhouse films, which I'm kind of interested. I'm very interested to hear what you guys lists look like for that. And it should be a good time. So Ryan Turek, again, vice president of Blumhouse. And I forget. I don't remember if I said this. Yeah, I said this on our last episode, but rehashing again, I did see him described as the most important name in horror you've never seen. And we get so many directors and actors who, you know, take the spotlight of these films and all that stuff.
But Ryan's the one making it happen behind the scenes, you know?
Right. And I feel like producers, like, it's such a role of, like, you know, it's such a wide term, being a producer. Like, we've seen producer go from, you know, doing practically nothing and, you know, just kind of being around and input and stuff. But people forget, like, they're like, producers do have an actual role. And I feel like it's not looked at as well as it should be because of, you know, stuff like I just mentioned. But, like, you got guys like Ryan out there, man, who, you know, like you'll hear in our discussion, is they're literally out there making the film happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, just a wide range of stuff, from, you know, founding Dread Central to all kinds of podcasts that he's done. And the dude has just been such a staple in horror, as like modern horror. And like, nobody fucking really talks about him. It's wild. So we're going to kick you over to that now, and we will be right back with our, we'll be back after that with our top five Blumhouse films. So we'll catch you then.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey, Ryan, how you doing?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Oh, there we go. Good old mute mic. Hello. Hey, how are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us today.
Of course, of course. So I'm going to tell you, just a heads up, my neighbor's doing some porch renovations. So every once in a while, I'll do my best to walk away when I hear the jackhammering, which has been so delightful. Let me tell you.
It's fine. Zoom does a pretty good job of canceling all that extra stuff out, honestly.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. I've noticed that too. And I'm on the iPhone, and the iPhone has a penchant for kind of isolating voices, which is good.
Yeah.
Zoom has saved me from neighbor construction a couple times on the podcast. So you're good.
Yeah. And loud pets.
Yeah. Yes. And loud pets. Yes. And I have all of that in abundance. Yeah.
First and foremost, sir, thank you for joining us. That's first and foremost.
Thanks for having me.
Of our pleasure. I wanted to ask, because you have such an interesting resume, so many titles for you get thrown around. First, you were co-founder of Dread Central, but when it comes to Blumhouse, you get called vice president, executive creative director, producer, all these things. So, and I hear it questioned so much. Can you just tell everybody, you know, your roles and what you do over at Blumhouse?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of, you know, I can completely understand from the outside, it's kind of an amorphous role and kind of putting a point on it. But basically, I'm the VP of production and development on the feature film side here at Blumhouse. I report to our head of film, Cooper Samuelson, and it's basically a very small team of us on the feature side who are working together to identify scripts, develop scripts, work with filmmakers. And then once those projects are teed up and crewed up and have budgets and directors ready, you know, depending on who is more integral, like who is the best relationship with the filmmaker, I'll, you know, more often than not be boots on the ground producer, and report to Jason and report to Cooper. So, myself, my colleague Bea, we're kind of like down on the ground, interacting with the crew, the line producers, creatively talking with our filmmakers, and just making sure, you know, just overseeing the production.
It's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot. Yeah, well, it is. It's a lot of stuff. And basically, you know, I mean, like when I am down on the ground, it is, you know, making sure, you know, the development train never stops going. So, you know, I mean, it's like it's spinning plates, herding cats, whatever, you know, analogy you want to pull in. But it's super fun because you know, it's like I'm interfacing with directors that I've admired and worked with over the years, developing projects that, you know, that I'm absolutely in love with or touching and being a part of IP, that I'm deeply, you know, passionate about. And just, you know, also just the sense of collaboration, you know, it's just, working with department heads and everybody on the ground, all the actors. I mean, like, guys, come on. I mean, like, I got to work with Jamie Lee Curtis. Like, that
hell of a deal.
I'm dead. I'm not even talking. I'm not even alive right now. I'm speaking from my grave. I died a long time ago on Halloween 2018, and I've just been a ghost since then.
Speaking of Halloween 2018, we heard that you were involved in setting that up for Blumhouse. Is that true? Asking about the rights?
Yeah. I mean, like, I can't take all the credit on that. I mean, like, Jason had been having parallel conversations with Miramax, but, you know, there was one day I was just kind of like folding laundry and watching Night of the Comet. And I reached out and texted my buddy, who was supposed to be doing the new Halloween movie for the Weinsteins. And what I got back was information that they no longer had the rights. So that immediately, like, just set my senses on fire. And I reached out to Blum and just was like, hey, I think we really need to check in on this. Because, listen, I absolutely, Halloween was kind of, I wouldn't say it was the movie that started it all for me, but it was the movie that solidified my love for the genre and all things seasonal when it comes to Halloween. And also I had learned in my time working for Fangoria, because I was on set covering Rob Zombie's first Halloween for Fango. And I got to meet Malik Akkad at that time and got to meet Rob Zombie and interview up Malcolm McDowell. And it was during that time, Tony Timpone, who was my editor, had expressed to me, he was like, Ryan, this the article you write, whatever it is going to be a big hit because you put Michael Myers on the cover. We immediately sell out issues. Michael Myers in the Fangoria history is like one of the biggest icons. And I always took that to heart. I mean, I knew, oh, lovely. That's a bandsaw going. Hang on, let me walk away for a bit.
So we don't hear good. Anything if that helps.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, okay, we can't hear it.
Okay, great, great, great. I knew that by kind of stoking that fire a little bit of, you know, telling Jason, let's see if we can get involved in a Halloween series. I knew it was going to be a daunting task because then it was going to be a question of like, who's going to direct it? How do we find our way into the franchise? And it wasn't until David Gordon Green came along that we were just like, you know what? We're just going to forget everything that had occurred and kind of start fresh. Just made the most sense. And listen, I mean, like, I love Halloween H2O, and I've got my own favorite sequels. But it would just make it very, it would just be very difficult to just kind of like suddenly jump into the runes story and the curse of Michael Myers. And it's just that would just overly complicate matters.
That was a fantastic call. Have you noticed the trend in other franchises kind of rebooting timelines recently?
Of course. Are you kidding? I mean, like, from the set of Halloween.
Do nod proudly while you see. like yes, this is the way.
It's just I've been around long enough to see how fads come and go and how trends catch on. And, you know, it just takes one movie to kind of kick the doors down and say, hey, it's okay to almost treat these franchises like comic books, you know? And I'm not saying like, you know, the kind of Marvel way or anything, but it's like, if the audience is rabid enough, they'll understand that you're going to make an adjustment. You know, we've seen it in comics so many times where they're just like, you know what? The death of Robin back in the 90s, let's just kind of course correct this, you know? And I just drew a Batman analogy to Halloween, but you get what I'm saying. And I just got out of Saw 10. So
wonderful.
What they did for Saw 10, I was like, yep, that's good. It's between 1 and 2. And now I can see how you can keep Jigsaw going. So it's fun.
Especially because, like you said, it's listening to the fans. You know, they knew the fans wanted more Tobin and more Shawnee, and they were like, right. "Here's how we do that."
That's right, exactly. And there's just ways. There's fun ways of doing it. And like I said, you know, it's, I think that audiences today are savvy enough to understand when you're going to course correct. That doesn't mean I don't still get or don't see the occasional Reddit thread that was like, hey, I just discovered Halloween 2018. I thought that Josh Hartnett was Jamie Lee Curtis's son. I'm like, oh, we tried. We did our best.
And you know, not to drag it on too, but it's genius because, you know, as horror fans, we all know remakes and all that stuff usually aren't received in the most positive of light, especially changing out characters, whatever they're doing. It's almost like you created a cheat code to get away with that, you know, and it's brilliant, honestly.
I like that. Yeah, for better or for worse, sometimes it works in some franchises, and for some, they didn't press X instead of the zero or whatever on the controller, you know.
Yeah. Another Halloween thing, moving on to Halloween Ends a little bit, you guys went a very ballsy direction in that one.
Yeah,
because obviously that's a big decision, and, you know, with such a storied franchise, you know, what was it like on the creative end of that, making that decision, and with Halloween Ends?
Listen, the, you know, we're on what? That was like Halloween 12 or 13 at that point. You know, it's like you have to, Blumhouse supports creative decisions from our directors. Like, our directors come to work for us because they get the creative freedom that they want without the studio interference. And when we came out of Halloween Kills, I remember flying to South Carolina and meet up with DGG, and he was already in the midst of spitballing with his writers a take for 3, and I sat down with them, and then, as most conversations with all of us geeks go, it's like suddenly we're talking about The Hidden, and suddenly we're talking about Rebel Without a Cause, and suddenly we're talking about, like, just the, even if they're not connected directly, there's tangential themes that I could see David mulling over and playing with. And it excited me, frankly, you know, because it was like, we're on the third entry, and what I personally, you know, don't want to see, and I think I would get bored by, is a 90-minute chase scene where, you know, it's Jamie Lee Curtis just running through the woods or running through a house. And as long as I think the feeling was, as long as we got to the finale that we got to in Halloween Ends, well, let's take a big swing and obviously give that big showdown, but allow David to continue to explore, you know, themes of evil change, you know, evil changing his shape. That's like, that's really it. Like, to me, like, the first movie is about how coming out from under the shadow of evil, so to speak, and rising up and taking it head on. And Halloween Kills is what happens when evil gets out of the box and kind of affects a larger community, and how that larger community obviously responds to it, and it's obviously not so good. You know, like they all go nuts. And then the third one is just kind of like, it's like, how does evil find a way to affect someone directly with some trauma and shape them to its own liking and basically find another vessel, you know? Mm-hmm. And these are kind of like big, broad stroke ideas, but that's what we were trying to go for, you know? And I think, listen, the fans were very, you know, angry, and I get that. But I also know that, you know, there was a generation before all of us. I don't know how old you guys are, but I'm 47. And I know that there was a generation before me that went to go see John Carpenter's Thing and fucking hated it. Like, they hated it. Yeah. They hated The Shining. Like, I have old Cinefantastic magazines, and I'm not saying that Halloween Ends is The Shining or The Thing, but horror takes time to marinate and find Absolutely. Its audience, you know? And I'm already kind of seeing that. I get to go to shows and I go to conventions and stuff. And look, man, I run into like a 12-year-old kid and his dad, and he's like, my son loves Halloween, the whole Halloween trilogy. And I'm like, great, we had an impact, you know? And that kid's going to go on and say, you know where horror all started for me? It started with the Halloween trilogy, you know, whereas we will have our own, you know, for me, it started with Fright Night, you know? So I understand the passion. I've been in the debates. I've debated myself, and I've also had my very strong views on certain movies where I'm sure I pissed off filmmakers and producers alike. But it's all fun. It's all fun, and it's part of the dialogue and the debate. And I love it.
Absolutely.
I love that attitude about everyone. Oh, the fans especially having that different experience with movies. But kind of like on that train of thought, have you ever does it make it harder to focus or to kind of adapt these existing franchises? Do you like working on like the newer stuff more, the more original things? Do you like working in existing IPs? Do you have any kind of preference there?
It's equal parts, you know, because it's like one of my colleagues, Judson Scott, at Atomic Monster, he and I were both on the ground for this movie that we did called Night Swim earlier this year. And he's of the same generation. We're both like, we have the best jobs in the world. Like, we get to be on, we're making horror movies. This is all I want to do. I just want to make horror movies. I don't want to make a drama. I don't want to make a comedy. I don't want to make a period piece. I just want to do scary movies. And so to answer your question, it's like, it's equal parts, you know, like, because when you get an IP and you're like, oh, I get to play in that sandbox. I mean, how can I say no? Of course, let me enter the sandbox and roll around and build sandcastles. And then, you know, but then there's also a special magic when you get something deeply original, like Black Phone or Megan and stuff like that. I mean, like those or Freaky. Like Michael Kennedy, pitching Freaky, he was like, okay, hear me out. What if Jason Voorhees swapped bodies with the final girl? And I was like, duh, that's what the fuck? Why didn't we think about that? It's so fun. A Groundhog Day horror movie, like Happy Death Day. You know, that's that stuff's my jam. I love it. I love when we get to dabble in projects that kind of twist things and turn them on their head. And I think that's how horror is going to continue to thrive, is to continue to confront audiences, but also have them look at tried and true formulas and stories that we've come to grow up on, but twisting them in a way that we never expected.
And well, speaking of going towards IP, the IP side of that stuff, something that's not out yet, you guys are tackling, and it's a big title. And I wanted to know what it was like getting into something like Five Nights at Freddy's, which, because I love your thoughts on the creative side of things. And there are not many projects that you can get more creative with than Five Nights at Freddy's because of all the lore and directions that you can go and everything else. How daunting of a task has this movie been?
Pretty daunting. And I was very aware of Five Nights at Freddy's. I had played, but I'm a gamer as well. And it was something that it was sitting in another studio for a while, but when it came out of that studio, Jason was like, guys, I want this, we need this, I believe in this, let's go get it. And he wound up getting it, and we wound up becoming very close partners with Scott Cawthon, who's the creator. And so once you have the creator involved, it's a lot of the work cut out for you, because when you're questioning, well, does this make sense for the mythology? He's like, I got you. This is what it's going to be. And so it was just a filmmaker. It was a question of who the right filmmaker would be. And Emma Tammy, who had done a couple of films for us on the Hulu side and had done a great film called The Wind, she proved to be the best filmmaker for the job, who understood the kind of a emotional anchor of it all and the mythology, as well as how to handle those kind of animatronics, and also the playfulness and the whimsy and the mystery and the kind of darkness that that franchise carries. That to me is like personally exciting. It's just like, it's like you have to explain to people, they're like, oh, it's just possessed animatronics. And they're like, no, but there's dead kids in them too. and they go, wait a second, what? My five-year-old plays that game. It's about dead kids. And I'm like, yes. And I loved going down the kind of rabbit hole of Reddit threads and stuff like that to see all the fan theories. But Emma and my Bea, who I mentioned earlier, she was the she's the EP on it and was the boots on the ground for the production. I mean, like they crushed it. It's so good. It's so good.
I was actually going to ask you, and this it sounds like might have been handled more by Scott Coffin, but was there any concern about the balance of how much to actually show? Because it's like you said, a lot of the passion for the FNAF franchise comes from the Reddit threads and the lore explanation videos and the theories. And was it hard to convert that into a linear story for non-gamers, I guess is the question.
Yeah, I think Scott had this story that you're going to see on screen in his head for a while. So whatever inner turmoil or inner debates he had, he might have had about what to show and not to show, definitely happened outside my view. But okay. I'm sure he had a very difficult time. And then of course Emma and her writing partner came in to kind of smooth out the drama and stuff like that. But they, they all worked very closely hand in hand with endless phone calls and creative collaborating.
I think that's probably a relief for the gamers to hear, because that just seems like such a wild pack of things to balance.
Yeah, no, exactly. Trust me, at the start of this whole development process, I kind of was like, oh my gosh, my head's spinning. Like, there's a sister location, there's this doll, there's this thing, there's that thing.
Were you scared when Jason told you it's like we're gonna do FNAF and you're like, how?
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, a purple guy. I was like, what is going on? but Scott, like I said, Scott was able to still, it's like very, I think that this is I think the outcome of the movie is something that's accessible, obviously, to those who are not familiar with it, and obviously accessible, to the fans who are gonna be really pleased with like the little Easter eggs that are in it.
Absolutely. And another title, I mean, as if you guys didn't put yourselves into the fire enough taking on Halloween, arguably an even bigger title, The Exorcist.
Yeah.
You guys have The Exorcist Believer coming out. What? I couldn't
what
imagine.
What were you thinking?
kind of, because it's scary. And it's very interesting because you guys knocked it out of the park with Halloween so hard the way you did. Whenever you hear a big title picked up, instinct is to get worried. The track record you have with Halloween, as a fan, it puts me at ease a little bit and excited about it. What was it like taking on a title like that?
It was a lot of, I'm by no means a spiritual person, but it's definitely soul searching, it was one of those things that was like, look, The Exorcist is available. And, we had these wonderful producing partners in Morgan Creek who brought it to us and, had great conversations with Jason. And it's like Exorcist is the Mount Everest of horror. Mm-hmm. And whether... It's so tricky because it's like I showed it to my kid and my kid was just like, okay, what's the big deal? And it's like, wait a minute, what? Are you kidding me? You're no longer my horror child. Get out of the house. But
I had that experience with my kid.
On what movie?
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, dude.
It broke my heart.
Say goodbye to that.
Yeah,
say goodbye,
you gotta leave now.
No, it's very difficult. It was difficult to not... It was a difficult decision, but also easy at the same time, because The Exorcist holds so much charge. There's like it's like a supercharged title. It brings a lot of expectations, and we had a great experience with David, obviously, in the Halloween movies, and David had raised a hand for it, so we heard him out. And what he's doing is, I don't think, he's got a scary movie he told. And I think it sits as a great companion piece to the freaking film, and I'll let the fans determine, or the audiences determine, how successful we were in like terms of quote unquote topping the original Exorcist, which I don't think we can ever do. And ever, 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 ever. But what we can do is create something that's spiritually in line, both on an aesthetic level and a story level, and still scare audiences at the same time. And what he's dealing with too is a little bit different from the Friedkin film, because where Bill was telling a story about, you know, it was like a crisis of faith with the priest and, you know, the ultimate evil and what, you know, evil occurring next door, you know, like, so to speak, with this possession of this little girl, you know, audiences, you go into that movie going, oh my God, what if that happened next door to me? Or what if it happened in my own home? The big what if, you know, what David is kind of telling a story of is unity in the face of evil. And I think it's like a little bit of trickling of themes that he had explored in the Halloween series, but distilling it and kind of adapting it to more of a supernatural thriller. And, you know, there was, when we talked about the film, you know, there's a lot of great comps that he brought, you know, Prisoners was a big kind of influence. We looked at movies like Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind. We looked at Jacob's Ladder. We looked at all sorts of films just to kind of get us excited. It's tough, but I think we made a good movie. I think, like, you know, it falls right in line with it, you know, it falls right in line with like the kind of like what I was saying earlier. It's like a cousin of The Exorcist, or, you know, spiritually aligned. I'm kind of rambling on it, but I think we did something really cool, and I hope everybody gets a chance to check it, give it a fair shake, without that kind of like, how dare.
Just a point of clarification here, because you called it kind of a cousin, you called it a companion piece. As someone, I don't watch a lot of trailers for things, because I like to go into movies as blind as possible, but is like companion piece, is that the mindset I should have going into Exorcist Believer?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And also sequel.
That's good.
I mean, that's like, we made a sequel. And I had been asked earlier if it was like a requel or like a remake, and it's like, no. Once you go into the film, I mean, like, Ellen Burstyn's all over the trailers for this. We made a sequel 50 years later, but, you know, it's another case. It's another family. It's two families, and they have to look to kind of like a someone who's a veteran at this experience, and they turn to her for help. So it's cool.
I totally unrelated, random point here, but you're the expert. This is the time to ask. Have you heard the term requel more since Scream 5?
Like, Scream 5? That,
there a surge in that terminology in your life?
not in our line of work. Not necessarily, because more on the fan front, which is cool. I mean, like, I appreciate that. You know, when Scream came out, and I'm a diehard Scream fanatic, I was just like, they're talking about requels. We did that. And then when they talked about it, name dropped Halloween, I was like, oh my God, I'm part of a movie that Scream mentioned, which made me very, very happy.
That's how you know you made it.
I know. It's super fun. And it helped that I really love the new Scream movies too. I mean, it's hard for me to dog on those, but I think they did a really great job with both of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ryan, I have one last question for you. And, I'm glad you said you were a gamer before. The writer's strike just ended, and we were speaking with Matthew Cote from Behavior a couple months ago.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. And he was saying how, you know, that kind of stalled the plans for that movie and everything. And obviously this just happened, so, you know, there's probably nothing you could say about it, but how quickly are you guys going to be moving on to that? How excited are you? They have such a vast world.
Yeah. Well, I was just talking to Matthew this morning. The strike was kind of holding things up, but I'm very excited that we could start moving forward on a number of fronts. We've got some good progress being made. I'm excited to just kind of dive into that world. I mean, like, it's a, you know, I can't speak too much to any approach just but I mean, it's just like, you're talking again, it's a sandbox.
Marvel universe.
It's a Marvel universe, sure. But it's like they've created what the behavior team has done so well is create their own world and created such a large swath of both survivors and killers that have generated their own fan bases, you know. I mean, Huntress, fucking awesome, you know. Like, I love the Trapper's my boy. That's who I usually go to as a villain. But he, I mean, he's usually the I know.
He's rough to go against.
Simple. Yeah, no, he really is. But but no, it's we're very excited because that game is just like a celebration of horror, and I feel like what a movie needs to be is both a celebration of horror, but deeply aggressive and fast moving and just incredibly, incredibly intense. And you know, we're excited, and hopefully the SAG strike will end, but you know, the SAG strike is not going to hinder us from the continuing development. So, that one's very active and we're moving along.
Beautiful.
That's fantastic to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. And, it's a perfect company. I was so happy when you guys took out most projects. It's like, oh, Blumhouse got it. And, you know, I just wanted to say you guys are doing incredible work for the genre, and just your time today is very, very appreciated, Ryan. We appreciate you very much. Well,
thank you. I have a feel. I wanted to ask you guys how you felt about the Halloween franchise, Halloween trilogy, but I feel like I'd be putting you on the spot.
Oh, the one thing that I'd regret about that question, I feel really bad that our third co-host isn't here because he is our diehard Halloween.
Oh, really?
Guy.
Really?
Yeah.
I love. Man, that's a bummer. That's a bummer. No, I love.
He was upset. He couldn't make it.
Oh, was he? Oh, bummer. Bummer. No.
Yeah, extremely.
Yeah, we felt bad for him.
Oh, well. Well, next time, if I'm ever at a show or something like that. But I love, like, you know, whenever I have someone approach me at a con, I'm about to go to this Halloween 45th anniversary convention tomorrow in Pasadena. And I love when I talk to fans who are like, oh, man, we love it. Really love the movies. And I'm like, which one's your favorite? Which one do you like? Because I think, you know, listen, I'm a fan who has, you know, engaged in so many conversations about the genre. It's like nothing. I mean, like, I'd be remiss to say sometimes it stings, but you know, at the same time, I'm also kind of like, just roll it off because I know how the horror genre works and fandom kind of evolves. So anyways, but it's been a pleasure talking to you guys.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ryan. We appreciate you a lot.
Of course. Thank you.
Dope discussion with Ryan.
Great interview. Blast to talk to.
Yes. And it really does suck that, like, as much as I give Rob shit, like, we do feel bad for him that he couldn't be there for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, poor guy. But we do have our top five Blumhouse films listed, ranked, spanked, and ready to go.
A couple questions about that. First of all, I have a prepared statement from Mr. Humphrey.
Oh, son of a bitch.
Do you want me to read that at the beginning or the end?
Allie, what should I do here?
You should probably do it at the end.
You think?
I don't know.
I
don't know what's in there.
Neither do I.
I also don't know what's in there. I read the first couple lines to see what it was. It's a longer one than the last one we got. Put it that way.
Okay. See, I'm in a thing here where, because I've tried both. I've read it to get it out of the way, and I've read it at the end. And the problem with reading it at the end is sometimes things go really well, and then, like, I forget about it, and it all comes crashing down. Just read it now, Kat.
All right. Statements.
Actually, no. I take it back.
Okay.
Let's wait to the end. I can't do it right now. I'm not mentally prepared yet. I gotta build.
I'm
sorry.
No worries.
Son of a bitch busts my balls even when he's not even here. I know it's gonna piss me off. I know it. What if one day we get a statement and, like, it doesn't make me mad at all and it's just nice?
That would be really nice. It could be today. We don't know.
Just super pleasant. Pleasant, Rob. That's what you're hoping for?
Okay. Yeah, when you put it that way. God damn it. All right. Okay, who wants to go first? Do you want me to go first?
You know, round robin?
Yeah, we'll round robin it.
Starting at five and working our way up? Okay.
Sounds okay. Good. Yeah, you can go first if you want.
All right. This was hard because Blumhouse has a lot of good movies, and goddamn, man, there was a couple that I really, really wanted in there. And I have honorable mentions that I guess we could save to the end, probably.
Yeah.
But my number five is Unfriended.
Interesting.
Yeah. I really liked that fucking movie. It was, you know, we see a lot of them now where it's like the computer screens and stuff like that. And I don't think this was the first one to do it. In fact, I doubt it. But it was done really well. And not only did it look great, you know, as great as it's like, it's a Skype call. So, you know, but they were able to build tension and create chaos in such a small environment. And I thought it was great, man. I really like Unfriended. Number five.
Okay.
Nice.
That was in my honorable mention, so I'm not mad at that. I also really liked Unfriended.
Nice.
Allie, would you like to go next?
Sure. Let's lead off number five. I have Paranormal Activity, which I know is a little controversial around here, turns out.
Mikey over there, like, it's not high enough, and me over here, like, why is it here?
Like, why is it here?
And Rob would be talking about a sex tape, so.
That's right.
A lot of different avenues on here with that one.
Yeah, but I okay. like Paranormal Activity. And so,
not enough.
But, number five. Yeah. Not enough or too much, depending on who you ask.
Yeah.
There's no making everyone happy on Slasher Radio.
Absolutely not. All right, Kat, what about you?
My number five is Run, Sweetheart, Run.
Okay.
Which I had not expected to make my list, to be honest. But when I was getting to honorable mention territory, I was kind of looking at some of the other stuff that I had right around 5/honorable mention. I think this one is really inventive. I had a couple pet peeves about it, but it's like, I don't think I've seen another movie that was this ambitious in this kind of subgenre, much like Unfriended. Like, they broke a lot of new ground for what they were trying to do. And I was impressed with it. And the performances were really good.
Okay. All right. That's fair. Okay. My number four is Paranormal Activity 3.
Oh, God.
What do you mean, okay. Oh, God? What?
I'm just wondering how many are in there.
Well, you have to wait, get to the rest of my list to find out. But it's Paranormal Activity 3.
Okay.
I love the first one, and it, you know, it set the table for what we have now, and they didn't have a lot to work with. And at the end of the day, you know, it showed that they didn't have a lot to work with, because they didn't. And Paranormal Activity 3, I feel they kept the simplicity that they had throughout, you know, 2 and the original, and they had a lot more to work with. They had the different cameras and like all this stuff. And, you know, they had very subtle effects that they were able to, that I feel they pulled off very well. And I love Paranormal Activity 3. And if I were to sit down and watch a Paranormal Activity movie, it would be the third one. And I know how much I go on and on about Paranormal Activity 3 or Paranormal Activity in general, but I feel like this is a fair spot for it on this list. And I was, it was hard, but I landed at 4 with it. So there it is.
All right.
Okay. Me?
You.
For number 4, I have Creep.
Okay.
Okay.
Not mad.
All right. It's just a very weird, creepy, almost found footage documentary style. And it just makes you uncomfortable the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
I just like that movie a lot. So number 4.
Not bad. I actually like your list so far. This is a first. Also funny that we're having Allie on here for a list, and she infamously wouldn't do a top 25 list and then did a list and won't let us have it. So here you are doing a list. Kind of wild.
That's right. Filling in for Rob.
My number 4 is The Invisible Man.
Oh, that fucking suit. Okay.
I actually thought this was going to be higher on my list, but as we get higher and higher up, I think it's going to be evident why it was not. I do really like this movie, though. I'm a big fan of Leah Whannell, and I think he did a really good job reinventing the Invisible Man. Mikey gets mad about the suit, but
Yeah.
I really liked the emotional performances in this one.
Yeah. And look, if we're being honest, like I do give the movie shit for a lot for the suit. It was a stupid fucking suit. I stand by that. But the performances in that movie were great. And just the cinematography, like, yeah, they fucking nailed it. You know, all that. I didn't like the suit. That was my thing. I did not like the suit at all, but I'm not mad at it being in there, Kat, because the movie itself, like, it's hard to sit down and critically knock that movie for what they did.
It's hard to say it's a bad movie because they did a really good job at so many things.
Great movie. Stupid fucking suit. That's it. That's it. I'm not mad at you though, Kat. Okay. All right. That's solid. Okay. My number three. I'm still not sure, but I'm gonna go ahead and say it. It's Halloween.
Okay.
2018. And let me say this. The reason it's three, because I know a lot of people, especially Kat, are gonna say it should be higher, but the reason I knocked it down to three is because, like, it's Halloween and you get guys who, like, Jason Blum, Ryan Turek, and like all these people involved, David Gordon Green, who are fans and have passion for that franchise. Mm-hmm. It's hard to fuck it up, you know, right. Like, you can get people who don't give a fuck. You know, Rob Zombie's a pretty good example. Who's going to want to do his own thing. These guys want, they did their homework, direct sequel, canon, all that shit. They did it right.
They did.
And it was a phenomenal movie. It's a great Halloween movie, but it's a Halloween movie. So I feel I should, there's going to be more original titles ahead of it on my list. And that's the only reason it got knocked down to three the way it did. Love the 2018 Halloween. That fair, Kat?
That's fair. I'm not mad at that. We have a similar wavelength.
Okay.
On that.
All right. Allie, what's your number three?
Let's see. Number three, I have 13 Sins.
Wow. Right? Okay.
Yeah. I'm kind of a sucker for the I want to play a game, movie style.
Yeah.
They're good.
So.
Kat wouldn't know anything about that.
Yeah, I thought I was impressed with how they handled that plot line and kind of the little twist they threw in at the end. So I really enjoyed that one. So 13 Sins, number three.
Nice.
Allie, this is the best list you've done so far.
This is a good list.
This is a good list. Don't make me regret saying that now. All right.
I was unsure when you started, but we're heading in a very impressive direction with this list.
God damn it. Kat, what's going on with three?
My number three is Green Inferno.
All right.
I keep forgetting that Blumhouse did this one. I'll be honest. Yeah. It does not feel like a Blumhouse film to me, but I really like it. We talked about it when I did my top 100 list because I was trying to figure out like where to rank it. I like it. I think they did a really good job. It's something creative. It's not like something that had never been done before. The obvious comparison being Cannibal Holocaust, right. But they, you know, they took the premise and they made it their own. And I think they were very successful in creating something that was ambitious for what the studio had been known to do at the time. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. A kind of a slept on Blumhouse film. You don't really hear that one brought up very often.
No, and I think that's sad because I think it's a relief. It's a solid movie.
Okay. All right, my number two, and this was the top three on here were very difficult. The whole top five really was hard. Is The Black Phone.
Okay.
I love this movie. They did a phenomenal job. I always harp on paranormal movies, and like I think The Black Phone had a lot of different layers to it. But at the end of the day, I think like when it got down to it, it was a paranormal movie, you know, for whatever portion of it. It was a big aspect of it. And I knock movies all the time, especially modern paranormal movies, for going too far with things. And The Black Phone didn't. They kept it subtle. And that's scary to me because when you go too far, I just start rolling my eyes. And they kept it
realistic, scary, creepy. It looked great. The performances in that thing. Ethan Hawke was incredible. He nailed the grabber. It was phenomenal. And going into the, when this one first opened up, Kat was on the bandwagon for the Black Phone leading up to it. And then I ended up taking the damn thing over. I think I like it more than at least I don't know how much Allie likes it, but at least between you and Rob, Kat, I think I liked it the most.
I think you did. And it was kind of the same situation. I mean, like you said, I was a huge fan of the short story. I was like way on board for this one. And it's not even that I was disappointed, but I was really surprised that you came out so behind it as you did.
Yeah, really like that damn movie, man. And I don't know. I'll wait to ask Allie because I don't know if she'll be talking about it on hers shortly, but I know it's not like original because it was, you know, the what's his name? He doesn't go by King, does he?
Joe Hill.
Joe Hill.
It's because if he went by King, he'd be joking.
Absolutely. joking. That's fucked up. But it, I know it's not like original, but like the Black Phone wasn't a huge thing, you know, like they kind of made it their own and brought it to life in their own way. And it was a story that I never heard of it before the movie. So, you know, that's the reason it was ahead of Halloween for me. So that's my number two. Allie, what about you?
For number two, I have Hush.
Ooh.
Okay.
Kind of, I really like The Strangers, and it reminds me a lot of that home invasion horror vibe, and it's just a good one.
Absolutely.
They took like what could have been really cliche and like made it good, which I found impressive.
Yeah. Okay. Not mad about that. Hush is fucking phenomenal. Kat, what about you?
My number two is Halloween 2018.
Wow.
Big fan of this one. Arguably too big a fan of this one. I really love this movie, though. I think they did a phenomenal job. It's like you said, they got fans in, you know, that respected the material and knew what they were doing. They did a direct sequel. They got cast back. They took all the correct steps with Halloween 2018, and I think it really shows. For my number one, I did choose something that felt more original. Kind of along those guidelines, but I was really impressed with how they handled coming in for a 40-year sequel. So
yeah. Okay. That's fair. Not mad at that. All right. My number one and the correct spot for it, Allie, is Hush.
Wow.
Yeah. I love that movie. It was so fucking good. Kind of like Allie said, like we've seen it a million times, the home invasion thing, but God damn, man, did they fucking nail. Like, they had essentially two characters in this thing. I mean, you know, you had other people popping in and out, sure, but like really all that mattered were those two, the victim and the prey, and the predator and the prey. And man, it was so good. Like, they nailed it. The performances were great. The cat and mouse game that they played, it made sense. Like, it was so realistic, which is what was so scary and tense about it. And I'll never forget that scene where she's on her laptop and he's just standing there behind her, man. And Allie, that was like The Strangers. Like, that was the last movie that gave me that feeling of that scene. And it was so simple. It was so fucking simple. And they killed it. And I told you guys, my grandmother watched this. Like, this was her first real modern horror movie watch, because she's a fan of like Stephen King and the old school stuff and The Shining. She loves The Shining too, by the way. But this was her first look into modern horror, and she said she was like terrified. And, you know, like, it has that effect across the board, except for fucking Rob. But, you know, damn near perfect movie. Love Hush. So that's my number one. Allie, what you got? Don't fuck it up.
Listen.
You've done real good. This is a really good list you put together so far, but please.
Allie's like crossing off a Paranormal Activity movie to put your least favorite Blumhouse production in as you tell her not to fuck it up.
I'm thinking about it.
God damn it.
Well, for number one, I have in its correct spot the black phone.
Wow.
Oh. Yeah.
Look at you. Okay. Why?
For all the reasons you mentioned before, it's just super, just the vibe of it so creepy throughout. Ethan Hawke is terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a great movie, man. I don't know.
Yeah. And we were questioning it so much coming up, you know, because it, like, yeah, with any horror movie, you're skeptical most of the time. And goddamn, did they nail that fucking thing. Okay, Allie, all right. That's a hell of a... Oh, I forgot my new button. Okay, I have a new button, and I think Allie's list embodies this new button perfectly.
Uh-oh.
And Kat, I finally got an IR Chris button.
Oh.
Yes, IR Chris was on Cult FM this week, and I caught him saying something that I loved, and here it is.
Hell of a deal.
Oh.
Hell of a deal.
Hell of a deal.
That's a good button.
That's a good button.
Good button.
That's going to replace my old hell of a deal button, I think. I really like that
one. Hell of a deal.
Kat, what's your number one?
In a rare instance where I side with Mikey, my number one is Hush.
Wow. Ooh.
Where it deserves to be. I'm obviously very biased because I love Kate Siegel. I think she does a fantastic performance as Maddie Young. I really love, as someone in the writer profession, I really love the idea of using that paranoia that you use to write horror novels as a survival skill. I think that was a really interesting take on it. You guys know I'm a big advocate for more crossbows in horror movies, which I think started as like a Hush thing. Oh, it might have started with Your Next, actually. It's been a thing for a long time. I've been saying we need more crossbows in horror movies. Hush delivered. Hush is like the gold standard for crossbows in horror. And my favorite director is Mike Flanagan. He did a great job with this. This was the movie that actually, I think this was the first or second Mike Flanagan film that I had ever seen. And I watched it because I wanted to know whether or not he was about to fuck up Gerald's game. Which is crazy because I think Hush actually ended up being better than Gerald's game, which I did not predict happening, but it was just, it was so good. It was a very fresh take on the kind of movie that we see a lot. And I think they did a great job. And when we're done recording this, I'm actually going to go watch the last episode of The Fall of the House of Usher, which is a Mike Flanagan project starring Katie Siegel in it. And yeah. They're a great team. I love seeing them do stuff together.
I am really confused because I'm looking through the Portnoy list now because I wanted to see what me and you gave Hush when we discussed it, Kat.
Yeah.
I don't see it on this list.
Was that before we started doing Portnoy's?
Maybe.
We did this pretty soon after I joined, so.
Yeah. All right. I'll go back and listen and see. Maybe I just missed it, but yeah, fucking awesome movie, man.
Great movie.
Also, Kat, let me correct you a little bit here. I believe the first edition of, well, you know, popularity, whatever, of crossbow and horror was The Walking Dead.
No, for me, for my campaign for crossbow and horror.
Oh, yeah, you watch Walking Dead late. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I only saw Walking Dead for the first time like a couple years ago.
Yeah, man. And I said it was a damn near perfect film. My only problem with Hush is the crossbow. And it's because of The Walking Dead. Like, Daryl had that big, beefy crossbow. And, like, this thing, like, the crossbow could have been bigger. That's all I'm saying. You know, it looked like he was shooting some Nerf arrows out of that thing. I'm not going to lie. But, yeah, I love Hush, man. That was phenomenal. All right, so Allie had it too. And me and Kat, that says something, man. Like, that was a phenomenal movie.
I don't know what Rob's problem is.
Does Rob he's not Rob. Like Hush?
No.
Rob drove me crazy because, and he's done it a lot since then, so it's not as surprising, but Rob was like a big advocate for Hush. He was like, yeah, we'll do it. It's great. Can't wait to watch it again. And then on the rewatch, he was like, I decided I don't like this anymore. And it's like, God damn it, Rob. Come on.
Should we give a third run with him on it? Like this, it had to have been a bad day for him or something, right?
It must have been. We need to see if we can talk Robin rewatching Hush.
All right.
It's so good.
Yeah. Hush is phenomenal. All right. So do we all what?
Oh,
Oh, no, honorable mentions. Okay.
Right. Never mind. Do we all have honorable mentions? Allie, you have honorable mentions?
No.
Okay. Well, you said Unfriended. So, okay. That's
Unfriended just didn't make it. Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. I have a short list of honorable mentions. 13 Sins. Allie, I really tried to get that one in there. Creep also was on your list, Allie. That was a really good one. Halloween Kills.
Okay.
I know not the most popular opinion. A lot of people feel one way or another about it. I thought it was a really fun movie. Like, you know, it's Halloween movie. Okay, have the argument. But, like, it was fun to watch. Like, I got to see Michael Myers just tear through cheeks left and right. Not mad about that.
That's the one where they think that, like, 5-foot-tall man is Michael Myers, right?
That was the one, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's what I'm saying. People feel their ways about it, and, like, you know, there are things that, you know, if I was making a movie, the fuck do I know, I would have done differently, but in their story, it all ended up making sense when you see ends and everything else. So it's hard to really knock them too much. Fun fucking movie, looked great, kills were awesome, and it's called Halloween Kills, so, all right. The Gallows, which I don't know what the fuck it is I like about that movie so much. And I'm not saying, like, it's a, you know, a 9 or a 10 or anything like that for me, but it's a really solid movie. And I feel like people don't give it the fairness that it deserves. I don't know.
People sleep on it.
They do. I see a lot of negativity about The Gallows. I liked it, though. Don't know exactly why. And last but certainly not least, Paranormal Activity. There it is.
Right.
I only have one Paranormal Activity movie on my list, so screw the both of you.
I'm proud.
I was wondering when you came in with 3 to start.
Yeah, yeah. Paranormal Activity set the groundwork for all that. And honestly, this is what I love about Blumhouse more than anything else. They have great films, all that shit, bringing back all these franchises and doing their best to do them justice. Love all that. But they take a chance on things, man. And a lot of people passed up on Paranormal Activity and didn't believe in it. And Jason Blum did. And he said he's going to give it his all to, you know, make this movie that people worked hard on seen. And he's seen something in it. And that's why, like, you know, with any production company, not all of them hit home runs. But, you know, Blumhouse seems to take that chance on a lot of movies. And I respect the shit out of that, man. Paranormal Activity is the best example. Again, whether people like it or not, it was a small budget movie that, you know, paranormal's hit or miss as it is, and they took a chance on it, and it fucking paid off big. So Paranormal Activity has to be an honorable mention.
All right.
That said it. What about you, Kat?
Most of my honorable mentions have been talked about already. I think they were all on someone's list, except for, and what I'm going to spend my time advocating for, Oculus almost made my list.
Mm.
It's one of Mike Flanagan's, I think it might be his first full-length feature film, and you can tell that he was still kind of finding his footing as a director. It's not nearly as polished as Hush or the Stephen King things that he did. But I think it was really solid. And I'm harder typically on paranormal movies than I am on, like, any other genre of film. But I think this one's solid. It was very inventive. I liked the character work. Some of the shots were really beautiful. You could see in there that he was going to become a really good director, even though Oculus wasn't quite up to that standard yet. But I like it, and I'm glad that it was... I'm glad we have it.
Okay, nice. That's fair. Yeah, Oculus, that is a slept-on film for sure.
It is. I remember it had, like, a lot of hype very briefly, like, when it was about to come out, and I feel like people have kind of forgotten about it.
Is that the mirror one?
It's the mirror one, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that is a good one.
So that's the second one on your honorable mention then, Allie.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. No. I forgot about that movie.
Me too.
People forget about it, but it's solid.
And Blumhouse, they have their hand. Honestly, I found out that Paranormal Activity was a Blumhouse movie like 4 or so years ago, so, like, recently. And I love Paranormal Activity, and I never knew. You know, like, they have their hands in so many things. It's like, and I had asked Greg, Darth Gregor on TikTok, when I was in his live today. Hold on, let me get Greg button. Which one do I use?
Huge clown penis.
Kick him in the dick.
I asked him what his favorite Blumhouse movie was, and he was kind of the same way. He's like, man, Blumhouse done so much. Like, honestly, it's hard to keep track of what's Blumhouse and what's not. And he landed on Sinister too, by the way, guys.
Oh.
Yeah. Sinister is fun.
Yeah, Ethan Hawke again. Fucking Ethan Hawke, man. When he does get into horror, he fucking does it right.
He does a good job.
Yeah, Training Day is my favorite Ethan Hawke movie, not a horror movie. But goddamn, man, when he gets in the genre, he does it right. I love Ethan Hawke. Okay.
Are you ready for a statement?
See? Oh, see?
Yeah.
It went so well, man. Allie's list didn't piss me off. Cat's list, other than not having Paranormal Activity, didn't piss me off. Here we go. All right, Cat, go ahead. God damn it.
Statement from the desk of Lord Humphrey, R.E. : top five Blumhouse films.
Huge clown penis.
Okay.
I'm worried about not being present for this episode because I have seen the types of movies that make it onto the lists of my co-hosts, but circumstances dictate that I be elsewhere during the time of recording. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I found myself incapable of submitting a list of my own, dare I say, a list we all know will be the one true correct list.
Uh-huh.
Here is my list of the top five Blumhouse movies, parentheses, excluding non-horror titles, because we all know the Black Klansman would be here if titles outside of the genre were being considered.
Uh-huh.
5. Halloween Kills. 4.
Wow.
Halloween Ends. 3. The Invisible Man. 2. Get Out. 1. Halloween 2018. There you have it, the official list of the best films from Blumhouse. I'm sure you enjoyed hearing that list as much as you will enjoy hearing that Tony Danza's character on Cassie was originally named Phil Banta. But directors changed the name to Tony because they were worried that inexperienced actor wouldn't respond to the name Phil. Happy Italian-American Heritage Month, Mikey. And of course, to the patron saint of Italian-Americans, Mr. Tony Danza, I hope I will not return to find you have wrecked the show while I was away, but I fear that my confidence in the two of you is extremely low. Yours truly, Lord Humphrey.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Ooze.
Rob. We went through the whole show without any mention of a Danza.
Yeah.
And you're not even here. Why? Why? Fuck. Kat, you could have left that out.
Oh, well, no, I read it at the same time as you did. I read these live on the air.
But when you seen Danza, you should have stopped. When you seen Tony, you should have stopped.
Well, yeah, God. But it was mid-sentence.
Son of a bitch, man. Here we are. Now I'm annoyed. You see, everything went well, and now I'm annoyed. Fucking Christ with this guy, man. I hope that girl stabs him. I truly do.
Oh.
I know he hopes she stabs him, too, is the thing. So it's like, even that really isn't even a win for me.
Does she have crazy eyes?
Hold on.
I feel like she has to, right?
I didn't even look, to be honest. Let me see.
How could you not look?
Did we check? She does kind of have crazy eyes. Crazy eye. We can only see one of them in the picture.
Oh. Yeah, hold on, Allie. I'm gonna send you this for review. Honestly, okay. I was so shocked that A, Rob was with a woman, B, she was a pretty woman, and C, the Tom Atkins thing. Yeah. I forgot about the eyes and completely.
He also looks really like sweet in the picture.
He does look sweet.
Like it's not the Rob Humphrey that we know.
He looks pleasant in this picture.
Yeah.
You know what I see in Rob when I see this picture? I feel like he's looking directly at me. he looks like he's saying, yeah, I'm in a Tom Atkins shirt. I'm wearing some tie-dye Crocs, probably. I got this girl behind me. Yep, I did it. That's what I see. Like, it's an arrogant Rob at the same time somehow.
He's very pleased with himself in this photo.
But the eyes, I can't really... yeah, she do got a little bit of crazy going on in there.
It's not the best picture for the eyes, but...
It's not.
There's a little bit. There's a hint.
Yeah, they're very dark eyes. Rob got a little bit of crazy eyes too. Looking at. I see where it comes from now, Rob. All right. Okay. Well, Rob, kiss my ass, man, with the Tony Danza stuff. Oh, God damn. All right. I guess that's it. I'm annoyed now. I'm all thrown off and verklempt. Like, I don't know what's going on.
It's the danger of saving the statement.
I hope for the best from him. Honestly, yeah. I did.
One day, you know.
Mm-mm-mm. One day. All right. So there you have it. Blumhouse, Ryan Turek. We are very grateful for him joining the show. The Exorcist Believer is out right now. I didn't want to put The Exorcist Believer. I feel like it's still fresh. A lot of people haven't seen it. I don't think we should really get into too much discussion on it. And like we talked about with Ryan, it's The Exorcist. Like, something like that needs to marinate.
Yes.
I hope everybody goes out and sees it as soon as possible. Like we said before, this stuff is canon. When, you know, Blumhouse gets their hands on stuff, you know, like, they're not fucking around. It's, you know, like, they do their best to stay as true as possible and do as much justice as possible to the original film. And we have that coming, that we have that out now. Five Nights at Freddy's is coming out by the time this comes out next week. So that'll be out in theaters and on Peacock October 27th. You can check out Ryan Turek on Twitter @_ Ryan Turek, T-U-R-E-K. Obviously, Blumhouse, you guys know where to find them. Fucking huge as hell. A super knowledgeable dude in the franchise, in the genre, man. And it's just, it was really cool to have him on. Like, out of all the people in the genre right now, like, in horror, we look back so often that I feel like we don't take a lot of time to appreciate what's in front of us. And, you know, he's definitely one of the guys that you can look at right now and say, damn, they're doing some really important shit for us as the fans, you know, and it was really dope to sit and talk to him.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. And the dude needs to be talked about more, like, more than anything else. So make sure you follow everything he's doing. And that's really it. You can follow the show at @Slasher Radio on Twitter as well. Check out our Patreon tier starting at as low as $3 a month. The fucking tier 2 gets you the extra show every week and all that stuff. And you guys get to pick one movie a month that we have to discuss no matter what. I'm talking to you, Shark Fizzle. That's why we did Buffy.
Hello, video.
Allie, you've been on the shit side of that a couple times too.
Of what?
Of those movie picks, man.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I only pick bangers. I don't know what you're talking about.
Bangers, says the one who picked Velocipaster. Okay.
Yeah, a banger.
A banger. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What else? I guess that's it for the show, really. We have some stuff lined up. I don't want to say anything yet because things are still being shuffled around with it and scheduled and whatnot. So just follow us on Twitter and make sure you stay tuned and subscribe and all that good shit. And I'm at Mikey's Dead on Twitter if you want to give me a follow. And check out Cult FM, the other show that I do with Allie. And wherever you're listening to Slasher Radio, at Cult FM Pod. We just celebrated our, by the time this is out, we just celebrated our episode of Friday the 13th. So that was a good time. We had IR Chris on the show to do a new series we called Behind the Mask, where we talk about, you know, who these villains are that we, you know, we spend so much time talking about the movies that we wanted to talk about the villains themselves. And that's going to be fun. Obviously, we did Jason Voorhees for Friday the 13th. So that's it for me. Kat, what about you?
You can find me on Twitter at @Kat_Velour, V-O-L-E-U-R. You can find me on the other socials at Kat Velour. You can check out my website, katvelour.com. And Mikey is very excited for me to announce this on the show. You can stay tuned for my next book, Puppet Shark, the novelization, in collaboration with SRS Cinema. So, nice. And check out the other show I do with Rob, of course, the Nick Effin Woo Cage Cast.
Yeah. And you can follow Rob @RadioRob123 on Twitter and everything else. I will say this again. Just like I said to Kat in our group chat, Kat, I'm very happy for you. I know this is something you really want to do and you have a lot of passion for. And I'm proud of you for going out and getting this. And I honestly am. And I am sure, as always, your work will be great and the book will be awesome. That being said, why?
The honest truth is that I was trying to get the novelization for Bad CGI Sharks, and they did not have the rights for me. Ron Bonk, the executive producer, Ron Bonk at SRS Cinema, is so easy to talk to. We had a great time. He sent me the distribution list, and they just wall-to-wall bangers. For DVDs that they were willing to let me work on. So obviously I chose the one that was the most reminiscent of Bad CGI Sharks.
Goddamn fucking sharks, man. It's fucking sharks. Allison, thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. You can find me at Ali Surreal on Twitter, Twitch, Blue Sky, if I ever check it.
Yeah. And Allie just did a movie night where we sat and watched Jason X.
Yay!
We did. It was awesome.
Jason X is so much fun.
It was very much fun.
Yeah. You were fishing around with the idea that it was your favorite Friday the 13th movie. Not that I've ever heard that before, Kat. But
join the bandwagon.
It probably is. I'm just going to say it now. It is currently my favorite Friday the 13th movie.
Yes. I love that this opinion is spreading.
I don't. Well, I gotta write another memo to Rob.
I had Mr. Cat's boyfriend on board until I showed him Freddy versus Jason, which might have been a mistake. That might be his favorite movie of all time. Like, he got so hyped for Freddy versus Jason.
That is a very fun movie.
It's now his favorite, I think, Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street. So I fucked up that whole thing a little bit.
That's because
it had been Jason X.
That's what you get. Yeah, Allie streams a lot of Dead by Daylight, Texas Chainsaw, horror stuff in general, and movie nights at her Discord, which are a good time. When she plays a good movie, which I guess doesn't happen
like
very
Jason
often.
X.
Jason X was a good one, but you've had Puppet Shark or Shark Puppet or whatever
Doll
it
Shark?
Was. Oh, Doll Shark. Oh, that's what it
Doll
was.
Doll Shark, yeah.
Right.
Doll Shark.
Doll Shark was great.
Doll Shark is so good.
Yeah. Well, and then thank you again, Allie, for filling in. It was short notice and not short notice at the same time, so we appreciate that, even though you're a little bit of a bane of my existence.
How? You just said my list was good.
Yeah.
You had a good list. I'll give you that. You had a good list. But we also talked about you putting me on Urban Dictionary.
Oh, yeah.
And Velocipaster and everything in
and
between.
Mikey, hang on. What did she put you on Urban Dictionary for? Do you want to?
Just a recap.
That an Italian prostitute is a prostitute. Yes.
A direct quote from Mikey Bones.
Yeah. Appreciate that, Allie.
You're welcome.
Check us out next week, guys. I'm fucking done. Good night from Slasher Radio. Jesus Christ.
All the best of Slasher Radio Podcast.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.